Welcome to the Finding Grace in the Wilderness podcast. I'm your host, Sharon Hawkins. Here each week, we will share stories about how God's grace can be found during life's most difficult circumstances. Meet with me around the table as we chat with others who have found that God's faithfulness never ends. We will share truth and life and discuss faith, fears, struggles, and victories. Join us as we seek to grow deeper in relationship with Jesus, the one who makes a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. Hi, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. This week, we will be sharing a very special recording by Maxine Boyd from our Grace in the Wilderness, Joshua's Hope Christmas brunch for moms who've lost children. Unfortunately, there are a couple of spots where we experienced some difficulty with the audio. We hope you are still able to enjoy it. Maxine is a wife to Bob and a mother. She works with veterans in Anderson, South Carolina. She was introduced to our group by Diane Moore, who says she met Maxine over a casserole. Just a short time after Diane lost her son, Maxine came to visit and brought her food and comfort. That's the kind of person that Maxine is. Thank you for sharing today, Maxine. You are truly a blessing.
Good morning. That was beautiful. Thank you so much. Well, it's a special privilege to be here with y'all. I felt inspiration and encouragement and comfort in watching all of you. Special shout out to Diane, who brought me into the group to begin with. It was August 16th, 1977. As I watched the TV, the show was interrupted. Anybody around my age may know this day, may remember where you were. The announcer said that Elvis Presley has died. I loved him. At the time, there were around 170 impersonators of Elvis worldwide. To date, there are 200 to 400,000. No doubt of his impact. Even years later, to a curly-haired little girl named Hannah. Her love of music showed up early. But Elvis always held top priority. She never wavered from this. She used to brag to folks that I saw him in concert the year before he died. One night at bedtime, 5-year-old Hannah and 2-year-old Lauren were talking about heaven. And Lauren's like, I don't know if I want to go there. I'm scared. I'm just not too sure about that place. And I'm like, oh. Hannah stood up, bossy, put her hand on her hip. Lauren, of course you want to go there. Elvis will be there. Hannah was 24 years old when she met Jesus. Now, she was a miracle baby. We had hoped and tried for years. I was 40 years old when she hit the world. So yes, God does have a sense of humor. And nobody needs to do the math. My girl, I don't know how to sum it up. She loved giving and big dogs and music and sunglasses and holiday traditions and travel and chocolate and Easter baskets. Roller coasters, Christmas stockings, movie nights, reading, and so much more. Y'all, I love stories. When she was 3 years old, her dad, Bob, was rocking her infant sister Lauren in the recliner. No prompting, she climbed right into his lap and sang "Jesus Loves Me" to her little sister. A precious, precious memory. Her music taste did change later on to something unrecognizable. But she knew what type of music was important. When she was little, she would dance to those old musical tunes like Sound of Music and My Fair Lady. Our bedtime routine was prayers, reading, and a lullaby. But first, she'd hold her arms up, and we would dance to the song, "When a Man Loves a Woman." But we had changed the words to "When a Mommy Loves Her Baby." She showed musical talent early when Bob, her dad, started teaching her to play the piano. She went on to play violin and was even first chair for a while. Y'all, the most important thing, though, the most important thing about my daughter is she accepted Jesus as a young child. This is my girl's Bible. We gave it to her when she was in fourth grade. And it is, you know, normal everyday Bible, just has some prompts that would help middle schoolers and young high schoolers. But guys, it's duct taped, even Frozen duct tape from that movie. It is underlined, highlighted, and there's notes in it. She knew Jesus. Oh, she strayed so far. But she knew him. You don't write in your Bible and highlight it and duct tape it if you don't know him. When a little older, she willingly served in church with younger children, and she showed so much patience when she worked with this nonverbal autistic little boy who was in my Sunday school class. Fifth or sixth grade, she took a short-term mission trip to Allendale, South Carolina, a very poverty-stricken area. I was over the moon with hope when she came home saying it had really changed her. Unfortunately, we were about to be tackled by the monster known as mental illness. Tried everything, psychiatrist, therapist, horse therapy, which gave her some moments of peace, but she couldn't make it enough, and it wasn't enough to free her. Our last psychiatrist in Greenville, supposed to be one of the best, said she has a language-based learning disability. I'm like, wait a minute, Doc. My baby's an honor student. He said, no. What it means, it's a communication problem with no real name. Now, prior to this, I don't know about you guys, but I always thought, you know, if we reared our children in the way of the Lord, if you parented with love, it'd be okay. Her mental health challenges made lasting friendships difficult. I'm not blaming anyone for how she was ever treated. Young people face a lot of struggles, but building relationships with someone like Hannah was not easy. She was often excluded. She was teased. It may have been joking to others, but my girl's sensitive heart didn't feel like it was joking. She was still playing strings and on the tennis team when the turmoil of 10th grade hit. Our world cracked open. We discovered cutting, burning, a suicide attempt, a diagnosis of narcolepsy, an autoimmune sleeping disorder. It was a lot. Sleep specialist ordered homebound school, and we had a great homebound teacher, which was wonderful. Our world revolved around private violin lessons, schoolwork, a psychiatrist, homework, and lots of sleep. That's what you do with narcolepsy. Fortunately, we got medication in place, and she went back to school her junior year to no friends, no strings, no tennis. But she was awake. Months later, her sad words just broke me. She told me her junior year she had eaten lunch by herself every day. And I didn't know that till y'all, she said, "I will not go back to that hellhole." I don't blame the students. Again, I don't blame the teachers. The truth is, my sweet girl just did not fit in, no matter how hard she tried. I commend one girl from our church, Caroline Stahlsmith. She kept texting Hannah and trying, but Hannah's heart was tired and she had closed that door. Her senior year was online school while working at McDonald's and looking for her first car. Y'all remember getting your first car? Anybody? Oh, man. Mine was, it was in the 70s. It was a beat to pieces Grandpa Chevrolet. It was rusted. I think there were spider webs in it. Had no shock absorbers. Now, some of you may not know what shock absorbers in cars are. I did. I went down the road like this. But it was a car. And every time I went to the gas station, I had to get oil. Well, she saved every dollar she could. And with help from us as a graduation gift, she got a used car. Better than mine. I still see that spark of joy in her eyes that day. But adulthood, it brought the death of her faith. She was chasing emptiness and everything the world had to offer but couldn't fill. My husband and I prayed, and then she partied and turned to drugs, which led to jail. You know, up until about fourth grade, we used to watch Andy Griffith as a family. We loved that show. Oh, my girls loved it. But this was no Barney Fife jail. I talked with the judge that day. Hannah was not arrested as a youthful offender, but as an adult at 19. She said Hannah could get 30 years. I'll be in my 90s, and she'll be in her 50s. I just collapsed. I was hot, shocked and horrified. She had broken the law, to be sure, but you know what? That was a lot. Anyway, I took on a new role. Now, you don't have to raise your hand, but has anybody else here ever been a jail mom? I'm alone. Goody. Well, I was that jail mom. I was a good jail mom. I bet our newest officer at least knows what I'm talking about. I dressed right. I called daily to check on her. Because when we went up there, I wanted our clothes to look proper and conservative. The staff began to know me, and they might have avoided me. I put money into the jail bank so she could get snacks, and she always bought snacks for her friends. At Christmas, she asked for extra money so she could get them presents out of the jail mart store. I met with the jail nurse monthly with a handful of supplements. I'm like, Hannah doesn't absorb folate and she needs whole food iron. It's low and her D's iron. It has to have K with it. And she nodded and smiled and took my offerings. I lived for jail phone calls. Lived for them. But when her friends would call me on her jail phone call card thing, I knew she was in solitary again, and I knew it was because she was suicidal. They would tell me how horrible it was, and I can see my mama in heaven right now. But this was not how our life was supposed to go. It wasn't in the plans. But did your mama do this? Would she just cross her arms, and she would get that look, and she'd be like, "But what do you think Maxine's doing?" Oh, she'd have been upset because I became buddies with her jail friends. We talked. I became buddies. Even one lady that was a little bit older, she and I talked like normal moms. She was in jail for something, but we talked like normal moms and talking about our kids. I remember thinking, well, we took a wrong turn. This isn't the direction our lives were supposed to go. I was beyond overjoyed when she was granted long-term rehab after 5 months. Now, she stood in front of the judge. I was in the back, and my baby had on an orange jumpsuit, and she had cuffs here and I guess shackles. My baby. Not the picture I wanted to see, but rehab was good. It was only for a month. When she was released, our relationship was quite frosty. But it healed. It healed, and we made memories and took vacations together, and we grew closer. And there were still ups and downs, but we grew close. However, when that phone would ring, I'd always get a tight feeling. Hannah found new friends that would accept her. I now affectionately call these kids the dark side kids. In the past, I would have been concerned with these friendships. Most of them had never had unconditional love or bedtime stories or Christmas stockings or church softball games or regular dentist appointments. But my nurturing, giving Hannah took care of that. She took on a Mama Hannah role. 2 days after she died, two of her friends, Ehsan and Josh, sat at our kitchen table sobbing. They shocked us when they said Hannah was always the brightest light in the room, the one that rescued and helped. And when things were tough at work, she would be the positive one with encouragement and solutions. Bob and I were like, who? Our Hannah was, yeah, she was very, my emotions, okay, I'm up and down. My Lauren was, but Hannah's just, they said she gave them unconditional love and a sense of real family. After her funeral, one girl said, if I have a little girl, I'm naming her after Hannah. That same girl, Allison, had lost her beloved Meemaw. She took the place of a drug-addicted mom. Hannah held her for hours while she cried and talked. Josh told me he had just moved here and was broke. Hannah gave him money. The night before Hannah died, as she's planning to leave this earth, she called one of her best friends, Erin. I call her Yankee Erin because I have a Yankee name. This girl's up north, and Erin didn't know what Hannah was planning. But she was out of money, and at that point, the girl still smoked. Thankfully, she doesn't anymore. Hannah sent her $10 so she could get cigarettes. She's planning her death, and she sends the girl $10. But this girl truly is a heart sister, and she and I have become close. She's become like a daughter to me. Hannah befriended a 40-year-old lady at work. Age didn't matter. This lady was a believer. She lamented she wanted to cook greens on New Year's Day, but she couldn't. She lived in a hotel. The next day, Hannah showed up at her hotel with a new crock pot. Hannah bought a shed to live in. Is that what we want our children to do? I mean, she could have had an apartment. She could have come home and lived in her bedroom. She could have been in a dorm at college. She bought a shed. But she signed it over to a homeless mom with a 3-year-old daughter, along with the furniture in it. A young man sat on my sofa months after losing Hannah, holding the box of my baby's ashes and crying so hard. He told me that Hannah was the first person that ever offered him unconditional love. Another young man left a poem at her celebration of life. I've got it with me. I can't find him now. Describes my girls. It's priceless. Now, I'll stop with those, but I have so many messages from people about things she did. You know, God's ways are so often flip-flopped to our way of thinking. In the eyes of the world, she was not successful. She wasn't wealthy, didn't have a PhD, no miracle cure for disease, not a great missionary, not a Christian husband, and no grandbabies. But I believe with all my heart she accomplished what she was supposed to do. She showed compassion and offered help and came alongside hurting, empty people. She was Jesus to people. And she didn't even know it. I'm blessed and thankful for her accomplishments. But in addition to being a loyal friend, Hannah was a tattoo lover. Now, anyone that knows me knows I don't want a tattoo. I don't like pain, and I don't think they'd look good on wrinkles. So my art goes on the wall. Two of her friends had just died. One was suicide, his wife a few days later, an overdose. I desperately wanted to help as she grieved. Well, our thing was the pinky promise. So I suggested we get matching pinky promise tattoos as a promise to always be here for each other. She is overjoyed. She went and told everybody. She was so honored that I would do this for her. She made the appointment quickly before I could chicken out. Yeah. But sadly, grief had already cemented other plans in her mind, which could rarely be changed due to her particular mental illness. She broke this pinky promise and met Jesus the day before our appointment.
I need to mention how my sister Cheryl tried to step in and stop the unspeakable. She was a big fan of Hannah and said she thought of her as her first grandchild, not her niece. Hannah adored and trusted her, and they had a special bond. Right after Hannah lost her two friends, Cheryl had a plan. She asked Hannah to come live with her for a while, believing a change of environment could help. She had already set up folks to come alongside Hannah with support, even while knowing Hannah would turn her own life upside down. Yet her heart of love was willing to make this sacrifice.
In addition to the treasure we have with her Bible, the night Hannah died, she also left us a note. And in this note, she said, "Don't worry, I've made peace with God." But God, he had a suggestion. Months later, I sat in my kitchen crying in desperation for the Lord. I needed to escape from this prison of despair. I needed something to hold on to. And he answered with an outreach called the Pinky Promise Journey. It's based on 2 Corinthians 1:3-4. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of all compassion, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. Is that not what we're doing? Mm-hmm. He comforts us and we comfort someone else. This is the explanation I posted on the site, and I explained it better. So as grief crushed our hearts through prayers, the idea of the Pinky Promise Journey was born. Our goal is to honor our daughter's life and hopefully give others one more tool in the fight against suicide and lost hope. So it's not just about those considering suicide, those have experienced it or loved ones have, it's about lost hope as well. The tool being a vow or a covenant that you take with a loved one. The word journey was chosen since life's road can be smooth, rocky, muddy, straight, hilly, wide, narrow, dark, etc. And no, tattoos are not necessary. But instead of sad posts, please join this journey and share stories of rescue, encouragement, hope, vision, bonds, commitment, and growth. If you take the vow, use that vow, write your own, but take the journey forward. You know, we have a place to go, like the site we're on, for sadness. But I really did feel we needed a site with hope. It was bad, and now it's getting better, or it's good, or this came out of it. There's a line that people cross when they're considering suicide. Once they cross that line, suicide's okay in their eyes. Everything else goes out of their head. I wanted a stop sign. I wanted to just buy a little bit of time. And I felt that if someone took a vow with someone, like a binding contract, that it might be a stop sign and give us that time. Now, it may not help anyone, and I know there's 100 different, you know, helps out there for suicide, and I mentioned them on the site, but just wanted one more thing, something that would pertain to Hannah. A few times, a couple of Hannah's friends have told me they're here because they took that vow. I brought some information. It's over here, and it kind of explains it better. And I've also brought some cards that have the vow that, you know, we wrote. There's a lot of stories on there. They're all over the place. I may give a shout out to Wild Hearts Equine Therapy. They do great work. My great-great Aunt Annie influenced me, and I never even knew her. She's had the biggest influence. She lost two sons, one to the war and one to a car accident. And we'll go read her story on there. She lived in Ludovice, Georgia. There's a big picture of a policeman. She's got a great story. My sister posted a song that really spoke to kids that had been bullied. That is a great song. There's a veteran story on there that's so encouraging. He was not doing well as a young man, and now he's doing great. So please consider joining and posting. Now, the friend that helped me set it up, because I can't do technology, she said when people post, make sure they put a picture, any kind of picture, just because people don't read stories without pictures. And she said for people to hit the share button. It is a public site on Facebook, and if we don't hit share, it's not going to go to other people. And we want it to go to people we don't even know, or I hope it will. But even my friend that set it up forgets to hit the share button. I forget to hit the share button. But as my sweet friend Diane says, be someone's pinky promise. Guys, I hate to do this, but I can't talk about Hannah without touching on her sister Lauren. And the reason I hate to do it is it just rips my heart apart. We still have Lauren, sort of. Another miscarriage. Then Lauren, NICU, sweet, exuberant, joyful, all over the place with excitement. She loved Jesus, and she served in the church. But at 17, her personality flipped. Severe schizophrenia took hold with anger, fear, hate, and delusion. I'll never forget the Sunday morning, just 2 days after she turned 18. I'm getting ready for church. She walks up the stairs and she says, I've been planning on moving out. I want my car title. Okay, am I going to fall apart in a puddle and cry on the floor and beg you to stay, or am I going to put my hand on my hip and get mad and say, excuse me? Car title? My name's on it. My name's on your tag. Dad and I pay your insurance. So I was all over the place, but I was sobbing and crying. But anyway, she did leave that day. Her friend's parents took her in, didn't tell us. So I know about betrayal and learning to forgive. A month later, she ran away from there. They didn't take her back. She did go back to school, and the resource officer realized she was suicidal and homicidal and sent her to Carolina Behavioral. Again, excuse me, I had two sweet little girls. Am I in a parallel universe or something? But what's happening? It has been 7 long years since I've talked with my baby or held her. Except for one night few months after Hannah died at 12:01 midnight, January 8th, on 2023, she knocked on our door. It was Elvis's birthday. Told y'all he was important to us. She wanted Hannah's ashes, but we couldn't even open the door. Our attorney and the sheriff's detective advised us to call if she ever showed up. The officer arrived. He knew the story, moved her out to the yard. Oh, that was my baby. I wanted to go throw my arms around her. I wanted to hold her and beg her. We love you. I'll lay my life down for you. But I couldn't. She was all in black and leather and some chains. And I've got the video on my phone still because we had a security camera installed. In the past, when I heard stories like that, I'd kind of go, yeah, but I wonder about the parents. You don't know about what goes on behind closed doors. Mental illness is destructive. My family saw it. My friends saw it. The authorities saw it. And Hannah, she struggled. She struggled with anger at Lauren. And I reminded her, baby, this is the illness. It's not your sister. But Bob and I believe everything that is within us. As long as our child is alive, there is hope. The worse the situation, the better the miracle. Just think of how this will cause the glory of the Lord to shine when she is healed. As a child, she was sold out for the Lord. And I knew I just didn't see anything like it. I knew she was going to do great things for him, and I still believe that. I'm grateful to be there, to have been her mom. I had precious moments with my girls that many never get. And I would love more, but that's for later. In closing, as a UGA student, University of Georgia, I sat crying over the mess of my life. I had chased emptiness for a long, long time. Something said, call your brother, my big brother, a believer. Imagine that. I adore Chip. I called him. He thought I would be a very good project. He and his wife took me to their house in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I was literally enrolled in Chip's boot camp. Picture really extreme tough love. Not like what my parents had done. I was the baby. I was spoiled. Not by my brother. And one night I was in bed reading a positive thinking book at his suggestion due to my very negative attitude. He walked in, tossed the Bible on the bed, and he looked at me and he said, that's the best positive thinking book you will ever read. And he walked out. And I'm like, oh, okay. Needless to say, I became a believer soon after that. He got me to like the Rocky movies. Not the fighting or the blood, but just somebody that came from the pit of despair and went the distance. Somebody that ended up winning. I want to show a short video, and then I'll explain why it matters.
You look so tired. Why don't you go get some sleep?
Oh, no, I feel great. I feel great. Listen, I've been thinking. If you don't want me mixing with Creed no more, we'll make up some other kind of way, you know?
There's one thing I want you to do for me.
What?
Come here. When?
Take this!
Some of y'all may not have ever seen the Rocky movies, but a nobody comes up and wins. The point is, I feel that God is saying this to us. Yes, Jesus already won on the cross, and so we've won. But in 2 Timothy 4:7, Paul states, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. But make no mistake, there is still an enemy that's waging war against us. Paul said, I have fought the good fight, meaning he kept fighting. The cross doesn't say we get to stop fighting. It says we won, but there's still fights. There are those times when we're going to be in a puddle on the floor, crying our eyes out. That's good. That's normal. We get it. But when we get up and still do the next thing, when we show comfort to someone because we know grief, that is a win and a punch out to the enemy. I wouldn't choose grief, but my prayer is that he'll use it. Thank you, ladies, so much. I appreciate y'all listening. I didn't do good with that thing.
You did awesome. Thank you so much. What an inspiration that you are, all of us, through it all.
For more information about Maxine's Pinky Promise Ministry, please visit Facebook and search for The Pinky Promise Journey. You can join her page and share stories of hope and commitment. Grace in the Wilderness also has a support group for women affected by suicide. It's called Lifeline, Shining Through the Shadows. I will include a link in the show notes for a connection to this private Facebook page. Brandy Ross leads this group. It's a safe place for you to encourage and a safe place for you to be encouraged. Thank you for joining us for today's episode. No matter what we face, we can always find God's grace in the wilderness. Thank you for listening to this episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. May God lead you safely through your wilderness as you trust Him, and may His river of grace always flood your desert times. He is doing a new thing. Let's not miss it. Subscribe or follow to make sure you don't miss a single episode. See you here next time.